Are you tired of juggling contacts, manually following up, and deals falling through the cracks? We can fix it so you never lose another lead, enabling 24/7 sales and support via an AI that learns your business. Ready to close more deals with less hassle? Get a free trial of our marketing automation at thebuzzcrm.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zwicky with the Green Peak. And joining us today, we got Stephen Murphy from Prohibition Partners. Welcome aboard, Stephen.
And welcome. Thank you.
And welcome back. It's your fourth or fifth time on the show over the last 5 years, so it's great to have you every time.
Always a privilege. Thank you.
So, you know, over the years, we've chatted about how different markets are opening and where things are going. It continues to stutter along in different ways than we expect, but it's not a bad thing. It's following a nonlinear process, and the progress is constantly varying. When you were on last time, we chatted about Germany and the excitement about what was happening there, the opening of the market, and there's been some great things. And every year we look at the US and we go, okay, is it going to happen soon? And it's continually the ball moving down the field. What are you seeing? First off, how did Germany do vis-a-vis what you hoped and what everybody was hoping? And with MJ Biz just having finished off, what do you see as the atmosphere for the next year?
So I think to your point, look, the state of the market, everybody is, yes, there's a few who have been in it, you know, since early days, i.e., you know, 2016, 17, 18, and you feel the gray hairs and so on. But there's a fresh wave of new energetic players who are optimistic about the future, but also a little bit more realistic regarding the actual rollout of regulation. You know, the fact that, okay, this is something quite significant and it does take a number of phases for it to be implemented in real time and for, you know, market access to actually open up. So, and as such, you know, they're managing their businesses as such. We're definitely seeing a whole new wave of players coming into the space, and they're coming in generally from either with experience of highly regulated markets, and you know, where they don't have that same professional risk that maybe they had, you know, back in the early stage, where the early stage adopters were more entrepreneurs most of whom are now on their 10th business, you know, since they departed cannabis, whereas the entrants now are from regulated backgrounds, so they have run major technology companies or acquisition companies CPG businesses.
They're more experienced, right? And that's one of the challenges.
Yeah. That was one of the challenges with the discussions.
And realistic about regulation, but also how to implement regulation. Who are the key stakeholders involved, and how do you bring them along the journey? You know, of opposed to setting up new lobbying boards, like what are the other ways to actually implement change? So, look, the biggest kind of global story, obviously outside North America this year, is in Germany. So in April, the reclassification removal of cannabis as a narcotic was massively significant in terms of allowing greater access to cannabis in terms of how it could be prescribed, who it could be prescribed for, and also the distribution methods behind it. Like, you know, I was in, we ran a leadership executive summit in Berlin 2 weeks ago now, which was just at the end of November. And we had, I think, 200 of the German kind of leaders in the room with a few regulators, but they were talking about how they are able to within a space of 4 hours have a patient sign up, pick out his prescription, and then almost an Uber delivers that prescription to the patient. So it's, the model has changed significantly. Now, that ease of access, you can only imagine the widespread appeal that would have, that may go beyond, you know, pure play. I don't know how many people get their regular medical prescriptions Ubered to them, So, you know, it's a little bit different to get your prescription to get a prescription Ubered to you. But when it's cannabis, you know, maybe there's a higher emphasis on urgency.
Well, there's still a feeling out of it. I mean, California, there was a lot of delivery by car for the longest time with dispensaries because that was just the model. And, you know, it is a very nice way for the government to maintain, or the pharmacies to control the distribution still, to make sure that it's going where they want it to go, because there's, on the part of a lot of regulators, there's still a lot of hesitancy.
There is a lot of hesitancy, but I think if you look at who's behind the margins are still very much in favor of controlling that supply chain and controlling that last mile as well. So I definitely see the German, you know, the German rescheduling and removal of cannabis as narcotic is kind of the biggest fire that has ignited in Europe this year in a positive light. Now, but there's also risk associated with it. You look at like the telemedicines, what telemedicines and that platform has enabled in Australia, and just the spike of non-compliant advertising and promotion to patients. And then the crackdown that is in force now, you know, like that has to take place in Germany. Like, I was in the cinema just watching the new Gladiator 2 in Berlin, and not a bad film, not a great film, but not a bad film. But you had ads for get your prescription
right
pretty much at every touch point within the cinema.
Amazing.
It is amazing. It's really good for like destigmatization. It's part of the growth curve, and you know, it's always those who are within the space, those who are comfortable playing close to the sun without overstepping their marks, generally can, you know, get ahead, and kind of that's where that market is currently. It's really for the raw entrepreneurs who understand patient acquisition. It's all about patient acquisition and obviously the distribution behind it. So their models for patient acquisition are really exciting. But of course, like, all of this has been done time and again in North America. So it's nothing new per se. It's just playing within the confines of medical and playing within the confines of some restriction. But it's still, at the end of the day, patient acquisition.
Well, it is. And it's interesting that has become where the focus is, because this is a product where we have no shortage of real demand. The question is, of course, to have it as an organized demand. And that's where I think a lot of people didn't predict the market accurately.
Yeah. On the modeling part, like, what a lot of people do is, okay, there's X amount of, you know, existing consumers, existing users. Okay, if we only get a percentage of those converting, that's our target market. But very few actually think about the transition of new consumers into the market, which actually, if we look at patient groups in Poland or UK or other markets, they're first time to cannabis. These are
right.
Like, all these new patients are first time to cannabis. They're, you know, I think the transition to cannabis plateaus quite quickly for a lot of legacy users. My legacy users still, you know, it takes them a lot longer to transition over for a large percentage. So the growth has to come from from first time consumers, and that's really great for the industry at large, because you know, in a sense, it's all ships rise scenario, where you're not just competing to steal the same group of patients or consumers, but you are in all intents and purposes growing the overall market share. And I think that's what you're seeing now in Germany, that it's appealing to patients and consumers who haven't experienced cannabis before. And you know, now with regulation changing, you're getting you're getting a variety of products, you know, that are maybe more appealing to doctors to prescribe or that are of interest, ranging from pastilles to capsules to everything in between. And then combined with that, you have the rise in or the progress, if you will, of cannabis clubs and cannabis trials. So the actual recreational program that you know, destigmatizes and promotes promotes positive change and positive conversation around access. So it introduces new people into the funnel, you know, as a result. Now,
and from an industry perspective, it also ensures that the companies are going to be better structured and more viable, and de-risking it for the investors.
Yeah. Like,
it's not going to be the Wild West where you don't know what you're getting into.
Yeah, like we talked, one of the panels we talked about in business at cannabis was Berlin was like, is consolidation on the cards? Like, what's, you know, like you're all, for the majority, they're independent. Like, yes, some are kind of part owned by BAT or part owned by Aurora or part, well, all fully owned by Curaleaf. But the majority, you know, a lot of them are still remain independent.
Right.
So what percentage, you know, what percentage do they retain their control? And that is really, look, that's really where we have our, where we kind of have a core opportunity for investors now coming in and saying, look, you know, these guys, they're all pushing for a premium on their validation, on their valuation. They don't want to, they have a growing pot, you know, they don't want to split it. And they have a really, really, really great opportunity in front of them that is, you know, that is protected by an increased market size.
Oh, absolutely. And it's a much easier and more straightforward discussion for everybody to have, because it's less based on hopes and dreams and more on practical realities.
Yeah. And like, we're at a stage now where there was fear over, look, Germany like joins the rest of the global cohort in terms of wanting a political upheaval and a change in governments this year. They're in the middle of kind of creating and forming a new government and, you know, in new elections. There was fear that this will destabilize cannabis and cannabis will be hauled back, and, you know, the progress that has been made in terms of policy and legislation would be hauled back. That isn't going to be the case. It seems like people are very much cannabis, you know, one, it being designated to an office of cannabis, and, you know, they're having individuals responsible that are somewhat apolitical is super positive. But I think today, you know, today there was an announcement an announcement regarding the approval or a stamp of approval for the next phase of cannabis clubs to go ahead in terms of it's called Pillar Two. Like, you know, now Pillar Two in this fully formatted rollout won't go ahead as, you know, as intended, but pilot programs are going ahead. So it's not like full scale, but it's, you know, what they have done is decided, okay, we want to continue the progress, let's split it out into pilot programs, and they've given approval for the pilot programs to go ahead next year. So they've designed some of those pilot programs, and as a result today have kind of given the legislative approval for them to actually go ahead. So, you know,
measured and predictable steps really is what it boils down to.
Well, yeah, like, you know, I think in April, when everyone was talking, okay, great, we're going to have Pillar Two by the end of the year. No, we won't to the same degree. It's going to be slower, but, you know, it is happening. It's about one you know, if you are planning for 12 months, make sure you plan for 24 months.
Yeah, which is a lesson we've all learned from every other marketer as well. So we do have to take a short break, Stephen, but we'll be back in a minute on The Green Peak with Stephen Murphy. I'm Richard Zwicky. And we're back on The Green Peak with Stephen Murphy with Prohibition Partners. And Stephen, you know, before the break, we're talking a lot about Germany and what's happened. And your organization is about to put out the Global Cannabis Report looking forward to the next year. Of course, you look back at what's happened and some of the changes that have occurred and some, you know, a bit of expectations versus reality. But what are you looking for in 2025?
Yeah, like, so we do a global report every year. So we've been doing it since 2017. So this will be our fifth edition since then. It's really, you know, look, when we first started doing it, there was 12 markets around the world. So it was fairly to do. Today, you know, today there's over 100, so it becomes a little bit more challenging, you know, of keeping abreast. One of the most promising things is outside of North America, all other nations are kind of following the European model in terms of the standardization, the medical approach, and so forth. So, you know, from a standardization and global trade perspective, it's really, really positive that the trade model is the European standard model is being the gold star. Second, the labs are going down the path of trials and kind of creating trials now.
Which is necessary for doctor education, physician education, because they depend on those, right? So that's such a huge barrier for a lot of them in terms of how to prescribe and advocate, is having the documentation they depend on, because that's just their model.
It is, but you would hope or you would expect this at this stage, there is so much resources out there that, you know, they can be utilized. Like, there is doctor education, and pretty much every company now is a doctor education platform or a program. So it goes beyond that. I think there was a discussion that started this week within the UN regarding looking the potential of them rescheduling, you know, or rewording their schedules on drugs, and I think alluding to cannabis as kind of, you know, the most consumed, but one of the largest punished substances in terms of possession. And if you know, that's kind of where, you know, if you talk of doctor education, it kind of stems from that and from the UN, and then that has massive, then that's the holy grail. Like, we try and do with doctor education is, you know, you go and you recruit 10 doctors and 10 doctors, and they tell a friend and they tell a friend and they tell a friend, whereas you know, if the greatest unlocker will be the UN and their positioning on cannabis. You know, if obviously we anticipated, you know, if Kamala got in, then the UN hands would have been forced. If she acted what she said she would, Trump. It's anybody's guess in terms of from a federal perspective, but it doesn't seem like there is anybody really expecting federal change as a result of Trump. It goes back then to the UN acting as the UN now. This is the first time that they have said, you know, okay, look, they've done micro steps in terms of different bodies, you know, be it sports bodies or you know, other NGOs redefining their position towards cannabis. So this is the first time that the the Drug Authority have kind of come out and our drug agency have kind of said, okay, look, we need to change our approach here. This is from the 60s and it's insane that we continue to live by this, considering how the world has changed.
Right.
I think that's, you know, I think that's that's where we're seeing a big change. But like going back to kind of global report, you're getting it's as a result of like major nations, be it Thailand, you know, Indonesia to a certain extent, like coming out and saying, actually, do you know what? No, we need to rethink. Like very conservative nations coming out and saying, we need to rethink our drug policy. We need to rethink our approach. You know, like Japan, for example, going and saying, okay, look, we're in favor of medical cannabis, or we're certainly in favor of reviewing our approach to medical cannabis.
Yeah, maybe Paul McCartney can go back to Japan.
Yeah. I'll happily meet him there.
Yep.
But you know, goodness knows, like who knows, China may change their approach.
Amazing.
And if so, these are kind of, you know, we're all so consumed obviously by what happens in North America, but really like across LATAM, like Brazil is really, really growing, you know, really, really, really developing. Australia has obviously become a billion-dollar market.
Yep.
You've got markets all across Europe. That, you know, Poland, for example, is seeing unprecedented growth. Now, that may change as a result of the shutdown of telemedicines, but, you know, it's still as a, from a GDP perspective, I think it's set to surpass, is it the UK in 4 years?
Right.
Amazing.
Per capita. Yeah. 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 Incredible. Incredible. I think I might. It's demonstrating that we're still only at the start of opportunities within the space. So there's I guess investment opportunities, or I get asked, you know, do you want to participate in this new cultivation facility? And well, while I think the cultivation game is fairly well covered for the foreseeable future, the wider supply chain and is still completely up for grabs and needs to be facilitated and enabled. Well,
and that's an interesting point, because the cultivation game in many ways is covered for where we are today. But, you know, having worked with so many of the LATAM countries and having consulted into a lot of the Asian countries, the focus on the regulatory framework, the focus on the standards, the pharmaceutical grades, the cleanliness of the product, the treatment, the processing, those countries are actually miles ahead of the US as far as the quality of production. At the end of the day, when there does come to be legalization, those countries are going to surge to the forefront. But as the market opens up, cultivation will be in demand again. And of course, it's going to be a game of who can produce for the lowest possible cost. I remember when I got in Colombia, got it down to 7 cents a gram, and Peru, we did a minor production. But you could get it for even cheaper, even with the inflation rates that happened since. You can't compete with that in the northern countries.
No, you can't.
Not our quality.
But it comes back, like, it won't just be about standardization. It'll then go to, you know, trade wars and trades. Like,
yeah.
But nobody was really, you know, obviously within the UN Charter, each country has an allocation. You know, those allocations will start kicking in alongside the protectionism. You know, how long can Canada can continue with their outrageous protectionism? You see the protests in Israel or even Australia as a result of, like, you know, Canadian dumping per se. But
yeah,
I don't think there is any short term fix there. Those who innovate across the supply chain and find, you know, ways to reduce margin without the crazy capex of a facility. will, you know, because it's you know that having that monkey on your back prevents you from being nimble, which you need to be.
There's a lot of good facilities available for sale where people have put in the cost to develop them, but because the market took longer, everybody ran out. And, you know, I know of a few that have turned over recently that sold for fractions on the dollar, but it's not that they didn't believe in the market. They couldn't hold on any longer.
Yeah, like generally the equipment is worth more, you know, than what they're asking for. It's, yeah, there is, for if you want to be distressed assets, cannabis is certainly the way to go. And there's, and it will continue to be, because, you know, investment into the space is going to remain tight into 2025. So we're not expecting a big race of investors coming in. Money will continue to flow. Like, there is good companies performing. Debt will continue to be the main financing vehicle, unfortunately, into it, which, you know, is not a great motivator for founders. You know, founders, it's not really something that it takes on a different management and way of thinking. And, you know, it's the only game in town for a lot of companies.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but so there is, unfortunately.
Yeah. So there's not financing available. But look, when we look at the global report, so, you know, this is the fifth edition where we've looked at every market around the world, and we've spoken to hundreds and hundreds of businesses and operators and regulators regarding kind of what's actually happening. And it's, you are getting glimpse of, there isn't a company doing who are now global. You know, there's no company who is planting flags in every single market. And that's a big change. People are going, okay, I'm just focused on New York. Okay, I'm just focused on Australia, or I'm just focused on Thailand. Or, you know, obviously if you've got like an offering like genetics or seeds, you can afford to be a little bit more global in your thinking. But if you're operational on the ground, you're staying local, and you're focusing on the local opportunity and building the local network. So while the global trade exists at somewhat of a higher level, a lot of the speciality is now, you know, being local.
Yeah,
and owning that market,
which is how it should be, right? For too long, in the early days, people were going global because of the press release value. And the value in the stock market for that press release.
Yeah, and there was a monopoly, I suppose,
on
IP in terms of people who knew anything about the industry, knew anything about the plant.
Yeah.
There literally was 30 master growers, and that was it. That has been super positive in terms of one of the major step changes regarding global development. Like, look, we're seeing the numbers are super strong, obviously still led by North America, but, you know, the numbers coming out of Europe, the numbers coming out of Australia, of LATAM, even of Asia, you know, as it gets more structured on its regulation and more secure from an investment, from an operation perspective, overwhelmingly positive. You know,
yep.
This industry is promising growth, like a bull growth run for the next 15, 20 years.
Exactly.
It's insane how more capital isn't coming into it.
Mm-hmm. It's sitting on the sidelines still waiting for the deals and going to put in when it's ready, but it'll be there. But we do have to take a short break again, Stephen, but we'll be back in a moment on the Green Peak with Stephen Murphy from Prohibition Partners. So I'm Richard Zwicky. And we're back on the Green Peak with Stephen Murphy from Prohibition Partners. And Stephen, you know, it's been really great. It's always great hearing your perspective and picking up pointers about what's going on in markets that don't always pay attention to every single day, where you look at it all and see the progress and the change. And one of the great tools you have to give you insights, but also to share, are the conferences you run. So you've got your reports, which are incredibly useful and worth reading on an ongoing basis. But then having the ability to get everybody together in the room and share the insights that go between the pages is invaluable. Your next Cannabis Europa will be, I think, in June, but prior to that, you've got another event. This will be number, what is it, 8 of Cannabis Europa, or 9?
Yeah, I think it's our 12th outing of Cannabis Europa.
Oh my!
So it'll be the 12th edition. Yeah, so we've taken Cannabis Europa around the world. So we've done it in North America and across Europe, but in terms of London, I think it's the 6th or 7th iteration of it. And it's always, you know, every year we try to develop obviously the theme of it, but it's kind of about making it more accessible to the. To the audience who are really going to help accelerate that growth. I think there's an insider passion in cannabis to kind of protect what we have and be like cannabis for cannabis people, which is obviously nonsense because it prevents our true mission. But we're trying to do something a little bit special for 2025. So we partnered up with Mary Jane Berlin, which is the largest consumer festival, cannabis consumer festival in Europe, to kind of co-host and create a new B2B day as part of that festival. So on the Thursday, which is the 19th of June, ahead of Mary Jane Berlin at Messe Berlin, we will be running Business of Cannabis Berlin B2B business to business day. So very part of the conference, but I think it'll be a meeting place for a lot of new businesses coming in or business people interested in entering the business to like. If you've been to Mary Jane Berlin before, it's like a full-on festival where there's like music and stands and, you know, thousands. I think last year there was 55,000 people at it. You know, it's a fantastic kind of
huge
festival and celebration of cannabis. But with Business of Cannabis edition next year is very much the facilitation of the transition into allowing for business conversations and business development and giving it a little bit of structure, but also to bring international regulators and international businesses to Berlin for that day. So that'll be kind of the first day of what we're calling European Cannabis Week, because the next week follows Cannabis Europa in London on the Tuesday and Wednesday. So that is the 24th and 25th of June.
Oh,
so the 19th in Berlin, and then the following week in London. So if you are, if you're coming to Europe, if you're getting on a flight and coming to Europe, you know, there is the opportunity to be present in the two biggest markets, which are very different as well, and are very different stages and have different values. So London, where you have a lot of the kind of global regulators, healthcare and pharmaceutical companies kind of are present along with all the finance companies. And then Berlin, which is more, early stage businesses, there is a rollout of a whole array of new opportunities on the back of, the pilot programs of the recreational clubs that are kind of being rolled out in Germany. So it's super exciting where, I think over the course of the two events will have anywhere between 55,000 to 65,000 people participate and come and learn more and help the develop new ideas. Look, I love, like, it's one of the joys of running events that you get to listen to some fantastic ideas. Obviously, it changes a lot, or is influenced by other industries, be it cannabis coins, or now it's obviously the whole AI cannabis. But you have new delegations this year. We had delegations from Morocco. We had delegations from South Africa, from Japan. You know, all coming and participating. And if you are in the industry, it because of the stage of it, it's still very much a people business. We still need to connect. You still need to connect with the person. Is this person one going to pay me? Yep. You know, as aspirational as we want to talk about the industry, it's still down to, you know, the people and is this deal going to be done, and is the transaction going to be made, and am I going to get paid from it? Because, you know, at the end of the day, it's pretty much a waste of time if you're not.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than when somebody signs an agreement and doesn't honor their word.
And it's too common in the space.
It's unfortunately common in so many areas. It's not just this case. But that's the unfortunate truth. Stephen, we are out of time for today, but this has been excellent as always.
Richard, absolute pleasure. I absolutely love this. And thank you so much for always taking me back.
Always a pleasure. Thanks to joining, and thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Richard Zwicky. We'll be back again with you soon.
Are you tired of juggling contacts, manually following up, and deals falling through the cracks? We can fix it so you never lose another lead, enabling 24/7 sales and support via an AI that learns your business. Ready to close more deals with less hassle? Get a free trial of our marketing automation at thebuzzcrm.com.